By now, you've probably seen the footage from Chicago. ICE helicopters circling a Southside apartment complex, agents rappelling onto rooftops, smashing through the doors, dragging people out of bed in the middle of the night, zip-tying residents in their pajamas. No warrants, no explanation, just chaos. ICE treated that apartment building like it was in a war zone rather than an American neighborhood. If local police did this, you could sue them. But when it's ICE, usually you can't, because right now ICE is above the law. Now, to help us unpack why that is, I'm bringing in someone who has been reporting on this for years, Christian Farias. Christian is a lawyer and legal journalist whose byline you've probably seen in half a dozen publications with New York in the title and many others. And Christian is a legal nerd like us. He lives for court documents, judicial opinions, and hearing transcripts. And today he's going to explain why ICE keeps getting away with breaking the rules and what we can actually do about it.
Thanks, Devin. Unless you've been living under a rock for the past 9 months, you don't need me to tell you that Immigration and Customs Enforcement, the president's favorite federal agency, hasn't been on its best behavior. You've seen the videos, the headlines, how ICE is an equal opportunity terrorizer, ensnaring immigrants and U.S. citizens alike, sometimes in the middle of the night. New York Magazine had this gutting, heart-wrenching cover recently that illustrates the harm ICE is causing families in my neck of the woods. Full disclosure, I write for that magazine. The thing is, the federal government itself is creating some of this content. They're gleeful about it. They're sending in camera crews alongside federal agents to document their own mayhem, and then posting on social media to brag about it. In the Los Angeles area, even Dr. Phil was embedded with federal agents during ICE sweeps targeting workers. But this isn't just ICE. In the Chicago area alone, as part of the Sokol Operation Midway Blitz, what a dumb name, U.S. Border Patrol has also joined the action. Now, don't get it twisted. Border Patrol exists to patrol the border, not cities far away from the border. But at this moment of National Guard deployments or attempted deployments in cities across the country, the Trump administration is throwing everything at the wall to see what sticks. The president wants to create the impression that he's the chief of this amorphous, multi-agency national police force. By the way, did you hear the one about one-third of potential ICE candidates failing basic fitness requirements? Like, I can actually do more push-ups and sit-ups than they can. Even top brass at ICE are complaining of athletically allergic candidates. The bigger point is this. As I've written before, the Constitution doesn't allow the president to have a national police force. Judges are with me on this. It's just not a thing. So everything you're seeing right now is not normal. ICE dragging people out of homes and cars without a warrant just because they look a certain way, that's not normal. That's not regular law enforcement behavior. The question then becomes, if all this harmful federal law enforcement behavior is not lawful, how come federal agents aren't being sued into oblivion for clear violations of the Constitution? The reason is simple and terrible. ICE is above the law because there is currently no law allowing you and me to go into federal court to sue them for violations of our constitutional rights. Now, I don't want to suggest local police act constitutionally all the time. They're not perfect. No human institution is. The George Floyd protests back in 2020 happened for a reason. But the reason you don't see local cops behaving the way federal agents are behaving these days, systematically and with impunity, is because you can sue a police officer for violations of clearly established constitutional rights. This is thanks to one of our greatest laws. It turned 150 a few years ago. Section 1983 of Title 42, it dates back to the Reconstruction era, that period after the Civil War that gave us the 13th, the 14th, and the 15th Amendments. One ended slavery, the other gave us equal protection of the laws, due process, and birthright citizenship, and the third guaranteed the right to vote to Black people. Fair to say that there wouldn't be a United States without these amendments. They're a huge deal, and they give Congress a lot of power to protect constitutional rights against abuses of all kinds. So after the Civil War, Congress acted swiftly and passed a number of enforcement statutes to crack down on states that weren't exactly down with this program. That's when the Ku Klux Klan Act of 1871 came to be. This was one of those so-called enforcement acts to make the 14th Amendment real for everyone. Section 1983 is a mouthful, but it's hugely important. It says, every person who, under color of any statute, ordinance, regulation, custom, or usage of any state or territory, or the District of Columbia, subjects or causes to be subjected any citizen of the United States or other person within the jurisdiction thereof to the deprivation of any rights, privileges, or immunities secured by the Constitution and laws shall be liable to the party injured in action at law, suit in equity, or other proper proceeding for redress. Despite that language, courts for a while didn't really enforce it as written. The words, under color of state law, kind of tripped them up. Did that apply to government officials who broke the law? As the Federal Judicial Center explains, the law was part of an effort to stop the Ku Klux Klan and other racist groups from terrorizing African Americans in the U.S. South. This law was seldom employed during much of the first half of the 20th century. But then in 1961, at the height of the Civil Rights era, the Supreme Court opened the floodgates. And in a case called Monroe v. Pape, the justices allowed police officers to be held personally liable in court for constitutional violations arising under state law. And surprise, surprise, the case arose out of the warrantless search of a home in Chicago more than 50 years ago. But the facts of this case will sound eerily familiar. According to the complaint, 13 Chicago police officers broke into petitioner's home in the early morning, routed them from their bed, made them stand naked in the living room, and ransacked every room, emptying drawers and ripping mattress covers. The complaint also alleged that Mr. Monroe was then taken to the police station and detained on open charges for 10 hours while he was interrogated about a two-day-old murder, that he was not taken before a magistrate, though one was accessible, that he was not permitted to call his family or attorney, that he was subsequently released without criminal charges being preferred against him. It is alleged that the officers had no search warrant and no arrest warrant, and that they acted under color of the statutes, ordinances, regulations, customs, and usages of Illinois and the city of Chicago. Does that sound familiar? It sounds a lot like what ICE is doing in Chicago these days. Like that raid in the middle of the night that terrorized everyone alike. Families, children, U.S. citizens, immigrants. People were pulled out of bed and brought outside. Some of them partly naked. Mattresses flipped over and stuff thrown out. A witness saw a baby ripped from a mother's arms. From a New York Times report on the raid, Roderick Johnson, 67, a longtime resident, said he was still suffering from the trauma of the raid, recalling federal agents breaking into his apartment with flashbang grenades while he was still trying to sleep. Now, in the Monroe case, more than half a century ago, all of these alleged conduct clearly violated Illinois law. And so the Supreme Court held that Section 1983, which prohibits constitutional violations under color of state law, allows people to sue officers implicated in these violations. In other words, Section 1983 created what the law calls a cause of action, an opportunity to bring a lawsuit in federal court. In this regard, Monroe v. Pape was a game changer. But right around the same time, in a different case, the Supreme Court acknowledged that Congress had yet to pass a law allowing lawsuits against federal officials who violate the Constitution. Almost as if there's two kinds of rules for two different types of officers. Over the years, Congress has considered the problem of state civil and criminal actions against federal officials many times, but no general statute making federal officers liable for acts committed under color but in violation of their federal authority has been passed. So there's a black hole in the law. And about a decade later, the Supreme Court stepped in again.
Hey, Christian, sorry to interrupt, but news just broke that the Trump administration is now expanding its ICE raid operations to San Francisco. So I want to take a moment to point out why these ICE raids make legal journalism more important than ever. Unfortunately, reporting on legal issues is more fractured and broken than it ever has been, and that's reflected in the breaking story about San Francisco. Over 100 media outlets covered the story, but depending on the sources you follow, it's hard to tell if they were even talking about the same event, let alone the underlying legality. And it's not just the facts that shape public opinion, but it's how those facts are framed. And when you scroll down to see how the story is being covered by every outlet, the frames can have a subtle difference that make a huge impact. From the left, Trump's actions are, quote, right out of a dictator's handbook, implying explicit illegality. From the right, Trump deployed the immigration agents, implying he's within his presidential powers to do so. And from the center, headlines typically focused on the extent of the action, which says little about the law. This type of analysis is why Ground News has been my favorite way to stay up to date with the news since 2023. And I want to thank them for sponsoring this video. They've been a longtime supporter of this channel and independent news media at large. Ground News is an app and website that helps me see the full picture by pulling in news from thousands of sources worldwide. I can compare coverage, uncover the political bias, reliability, and most importantly, who owns the sources reporting the news that you're reading. And it's not just me. Ground News has been recognized by the Nobel Peace Center for its impact on media literacy. And I also love their blind spot feature, which shows you stories that are unreported by either side of the political spectrum. If you're only getting your news from one or two places, you might miss the hundreds of ICE-related stories like this one of House Democrats launching a master ICE tracker to document all ICE enforcement actions. This was surprisingly underreported from the left. Or this one from New York AG Tish James urging citizens to record and report ICE actions. This was virtually ignored by the right. So if you care about the truth, context, and evidence like we do, I recommend you check out Ground News. It's the tool I personally rely on to stay on top of breaking news with clarity. And as a legal eaglet, you can get 40% off the Unlimited Access Vantage plan, the same one that I use, by scanning the QR code or clicking on the link below. And by subscribing, you're also supporting an independent news platform that's working to make the media landscape more transparent and balanced. So sign up for Ground News today, or I'll see you in court.
One truism as lawyers and legal journalists hear often is, where there's a right, there must be a remedy for its violation. Marbury versus Madison, one of the seminal cases in constitutional law, contains a version of this principle. The very essence of civil liberty certainly consists in the right of every individual to claim the protection of the laws wherever he receives an injury. And under this principle, whenever the government, any government, violates your constitutional rights, there must be a way to hold it accountable. For things like this, and this, and this, or maybe this. One foundational right is the one found in the Fourth Amendment, which prohibits the government from conducting unreasonable searches and seizures. Courts have held that the amendment applies to everything from illegal stops to incidents of police brutality. But you can't just go into court and complain, "My Fourth Amendment rights were violated." You need a vehicle to vindicate that right. Not like a car that you drive. You need an actual legal vehicle. When a local cop or some other state official is the one to blame, that vehicle is Section 1983. But Section 1983 only applies to violations of state law. It doesn't apply to violations arising under federal law. So in 1971, the Supreme Court, still high from the Civil Rights Revolution from the 1960s, created a solution, a Bivens cause of action. It's called an implied cause of action because it doesn't come from the text of a statute. This type of lawsuit gets its name from this case, Bivens versus six unknown federal narcotics agents. The name of the case may seem funny, but that's how a lot of civil rights cases begin. A lot of times, people have no idea who exactly violated their rights, their names, identities, or even the agencies the agents work for. We see that a lot these days. Federal agents cover their faces, dress in plain clothes, sometimes in military gear. You have no idea who they work for. They won't give you an explanation either. They could be fanboys cosplaying as federal law enforcement for all we know. In this case, Webster Bivens claims in a lawsuit filed in New York that his Fourth Amendment rights were violated when, quote, agents of the Federal Bureau of Narcotics, acting under claim of federal authority, entered his apartment and arrested him for alleged narcotics violations. The agents manacled petitioner in front of his wife and children and threatened to arrest the entire family. They searched the apartment from stem to stern, that means the whole place. Thereafter, petitioner was taken to the federal courthouse in Brooklyn, where he was interrogated, booked, and subjected to a visual strip search. Bivens also asserted in his complaint that the arrest and search were effected without a warrant, and that unreasonable force was employed in making the arrest. Fairly read, it alleges as well that the arrest was made without probable cause. In an opinion by Justice William Brennan, one of the liberal lions of the highest court at the time, the Supreme Court looked to the text of the Fourth Amendment and reasoned that it could not be that there's nothing courts could do to remedy such an egregious violation of the Constitution. He wrote, "An agent acting, albeit unconstitutionally, in the name of the United States possesses a far greater capacity for harm than an individual trespasser exercising no authority other than his own." Justice Brennan added that the Fourth Amendment guarantees to citizens of the United States the absolute right to be free from unreasonable searches and seizures carried out by virtue of federal authority, and where federally protected rights have been invaded, it has been the rule from the beginning that courts will be alert to adjust the remedies so as to grant the necessary relief. If the Constitution means anything, it must mean that when federal officials break the law, citizens have a way to seek justice. It's as simple as that. In other words, Bivens was the court's acknowledgement that rights without remedies are just words on parchment. They're useless. The court in Bivens recognized that principle, not simply as an act of judicial activism, which it was, but as a necessary safeguard for the rule of law itself. Right before Justice Brennan announced that Mr. Bivens is entitled to recover money damages for any injuries he has suffered as a result of the agent's violation of the amendment, he points to that seminal Marbury v. Madison quote I noted earlier, which is worth repeating. "The very essence of civil liberty certainly consists in the right of every individual to claim the protection of the laws whenever he receives an injury. So for a time, Bivens became the missing piece, the federal counterpart to Section 1983. For a moment, it felt like the Constitution had teeth, that it meant something. Because of Bivens, ordinary people could fight back when federal power crossed the line. But that moment didn't last. Save for a couple of exceptions in 1979 and 1980, the Supreme Court has refused to extend Bivens to all sorts of unconstitutional behavior by federal officials. Over the next 50 years, the court would chip away at Bivens so relentlessly that today, it's less of a shield for civil rights than a historical artifact. I won't walk you through all the cases that did this, but in 2017, in a post-9/11 case with egregious facts, the Supreme Court went as far as to call Bivens a disfavored judicial activity. The Supreme Court stated that the Bivens remedy is not available if there are special factors counseling restraint. And when the case involves national security or immigration, courts are reluctant to intrude upon the president's authority unless Congress explicitly authorized it. You can see where this is going. We see this in the case of Hernandez v. Mesa, where a 15-year-old Mexican boy, Sergio Adrián Hernández Huereca, that's how you pronounce his name in his native Spanish, was playing with friends near the border when a U.S. Border Patrol agent standing on U.S. soil shot and killed him across the line in Mexico. And the family sued under Bivens. But the Supreme Court said no. Because the case involved border security and foreign relations, the justices held that it wasn't their place to allow a new cause of action. As a result of this retrenchment, there's a lot of unconstitutional behavior by federal officials over which you simply cannot sue them for damages. As in, you'll be laughed out of court. Except there's nothing funny about unconstitutional behavior. For our purposes, the one case I want to draw your attention to is one decided in 2022, which so perfectly illustrates the black hole that Bivens is in. Egbert v. Boole dealt with a rather simple fact pattern, one almost identical to Bivens, except the agent involved was a border agent. Robert Boole owned a bed and breakfast called Smuggler's Inn in Blaine, Washington, right on the U.S.-Canada border. One day he tipped off Eric Egbert, a Border Patrol agent, that a Turkish national arranged transportation to Smuggler's Inn. Egbert followed one of Boole's vehicles, then refused to leave when asked, lifted and threw Boole to the ground, checked the guest papers, found them in order, and left. Boole sued Egbert individually under a damages theory for both a Fourth Amendment excessive force claim and a First Amendment retaliation claim. The court broke 6-3, with all the conservative justices in the majority and the three liberals dissenting and concurring in part. The court held that the risk of undermining border security provides reason to hesitate before extending Bivens into this field. That's legal lingo for we don't even want to go there. Furthermore, the court said that a plaintiff simply does not have a right to sue Border Patrol officers engaged in immigration-related functions for alleged excessive force or for First Amendment retaliation claims. In effect, the Egbert case shut the door on a lot of claims against federal agents engaged in any immigration enforcement. The result has been that Bivens has been largely confined to its facts. It's literally an artifact of its time. It's not a thing that we're extending anymore. It's limited to a warrantless raid by federal agents of private property. Nothing more, nothing less. Anything else from agents roughing you up on your own property or any of the other violence we've seen with our own eyes in the past year? No, not those violations. Those are off limits. The courts can't do anything about them. But there's one other option, at least on paper. The Federal Tort Claims Act allows individuals to seek monetary damages from the United States for torts committed by federal immigration officers. Unlike a Bivens claim, the FTCA provides a clear statutory waiver of sovereign immunity. All that means is that you can actually use it to try to gain some relief. This sounds great in theory. It lets you sue the federal government for misconduct by its agents, but in practice, it's not great. Before you can even get to a court, you have to file a detailed administrative claim, hit some strict deadlines, and jump through a series of procedural hoops. And even if you clear those, the FTCA borrows state tort law, meaning your case can collapse if there's no comparable private person claim under state law. And to make things tougher, many immigration enforcement actions are deemed uniquely governmental, which takes them off the table entirely. The remedies under the FTCA are limited too, so the FTCA really isn't a viable option for most people. Unless, of course, you're Donald Trump, file an FTCA claim against DOJ, and then as president, try to shake down the government for hundreds of millions of dollars. So if you've made it this far, I don't want you to give in to hopelessness and despair. Lawlessness doesn't have to mean powerlessness. Yes, it's true the deck is stacked against us, against regular people going about their everyday lives. But if all the law breaking in Chicago and elsewhere has taught us anything, it is that people aren't taking any of this lying down. For one, communities are responding, organizing, protesting, developing networks of care, of mutual aid, and self-protection to keep their own out of harm's way. Neighbors are looking out for their neighbors. They're recording these incidents, calling out abuses in real time. Sometimes to these agents' faces, their masked faces. In one incident that went viral a few weeks ago, Chicagoans effectively saved a man calling for help, not with force, but just by being present. One pastor in Chicago put it this way: "This is intimidation. It's not immigration enforcement. Don't give them what they want, Chicago. They want us to get angry enough to lash out. They want to point their cameras and say, 'See, this city is violent. See, people of color are the problem.' Don't give them their footage. Give them the truth. Record what you see. Expose injustice. Share the videos and let the world see what's really happening in our shelters, in our neighborhoods, and in our streets." To borrow from my own religious background, this is called bearing witness. Bearing witness and not looking away is how we avoid being desensitized to all this cruelty. And the reality is that the broader public, people who don't live in cities and may not be following this assault on their sovereignty, they're slowly beginning to realize that a lot of this is not normal. According to YouGov, at the moment, ICE isn't a very popular federal agency, and people's support for hardline immigration enforcement is decreasing. And more people than ever, a record high according to Gallup, are viewing immigration as a good thing for the country. I imagine people seeing a video of a church-going family being brutalized by ICE isn't helping. That's a real case, by the way. At the local level, cities and states are responding with policies that protect their own from federal overreach. Many of them call themselves sanctuary jurisdictions, where hardworking people are offered opportunities all the same, without regard to immigration status. In many of these cities where you're from, it's truly irrelevant. A number of these same localities are responding with lawsuits of their own. But lawsuits are only a small part of the pushback. Recently, Mayor Brandon Johnson in Chicago unveiled a budget proposal aimed at protecting people, not just from the ICE invasion happening there, but so many other areas where the current administration is taking aim at the city, with unlawful funding cuts and other retaliation. In California, state lawmakers recently passed the No Secret Police Act, a measure that is meant to deter ICE agents from masking up and terrorize communities without accountability. A similar measure was introduced in the House of Representatives. And of course, Congress could step in at any minute and codify Bivens into federal law. And they don't have to reinvent the wheel. They could do it right there in Section 1983, tweaking the statute just a little bit to clarify that constitutional violations under color of federal law are also fair game. That's exactly what a group of lawmakers did last year when they introduced, as they have in years past, the Bivens Act. It's only 5 words in length. It adds the words "of the United States or ... to the text of Section 1983. If the Bivens Act becomes law, Section 1983 would look like this. And that's all it would take so rogue federal agents are no longer above the law.
Thank you, Christian, for that sobering analysis. Let us know in the comments if you think this law should change. And of course, if you're assaulted by law enforcement or get into an auto accident or suffer another personal injury, I know a good lawyer. Now, after I started this channel, every week I'd get hundreds of comments and emails from viewers who are dealing with legal problems. And they'd ask, "Can you help me find a lawyer? How do I know if this attorney is any good?" And there's a massive gap in our justice system. It's that people don't know how to find the right lawyer for their specific situation. They're scared, they're overwhelmed, and they end up doing nothing or hiring the first attorney who calls them back. And that really bothered me. So I started to wonder, what if there was a different way? What if we could build a law firm that actually lived up to the values that I talk about on this channel? Transparency, accessibility, and putting clients first instead of chasing billable hours. A firm where you don't need to pay anything up front, and your lawyers only get paid if you do, to maximize your opportunity for justice. So a few years ago, I decided to fix that problem. I decided to start my own personal injury law firm. And honestly, it wasn't an easy choice. But I realized I was in this unique position. I had this platform, this community, and the experience. Not to get rich, trust me, there are easier ways to make money than starting a law practice. But we did it because access to justice shouldn't be a luxury. Because finding the right legal representation shouldn't feel like playing Russian roulette with your future. And when you work with my firm, you're not just getting a lawyer. You're getting a team that understands that behind every case is a real person with real stakes. If we can't represent you or you're in a state where we don't practice, we'll take the time to try to match you with an attorney in my personal network of lawyers. A national network of some of the best lawyers in the country who actually specialize in what you're going through, located right where you are, not just whoever happens to be available. So if you're dealing with a personal injury, a car crash, a data breach, sexual harassment, a Social Security or workers' comp issue, give us a call at the number on screen or click on the link below. Now, I can't represent everyone that watches this channel. I wish I could, but what I can do is make sure that when you need legal help, you have somewhere to turn to that you can trust. So whether it's me handling your case or the incredible attorneys we partnered with, you'll get the same principles of honesty and education that we bring to every video. And if you're dealing with a legal issue and you're not sure where to start, check out the link in the description. Let's have a conversation about how we can help you find not just a lawyer, but the right lawyer for your situation. Because at the end of the day, that's what this is all about, making sure that when life gets complicated, you don't have to face it alone. Which is why when you need a lawyer, you don't just need a legal team, you need the Eagle Team.